Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is CrossFit Games competitor Margo Alvarez. Margo is one of the most composed CrossFit athletes that I've ever watched, and it was a pleasure to learn about some of the experiences and lessons that she learned along the way that helped shape the type of competitor that she is. She shed some light on her mindset and how she developed it. And we talk about her opening a vineyard and a wine company with her husband, Alex, and some of the time management and productivity skills that she's had to develop by being an elite athlete and an entrepreneur now. Hope you enjoy the show. And I'm here with Margo Alvarez. Margo, I know you're a super busy girl. Thank you so much for making some time for this. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited for this interview.
As am I.
So I've got some pretty serious questions that I've prepped you for today, but I'd like to kind of start out on a lighter note. Who is the funniest CrossFit Games athlete in your opinion?
In my opinion, I would say Emily Abbott or Alex Parker. They both have, they're great personalities, great people, and they obviously have that in person, but when you see what they share through social media, whether that's Instagram or Facebook, you can just see their energy and the ability to be able to connect with people in kind of a funny, whether it's sarcastic or not, way. It's tough to say just one of both of those, but they both are pretty funny and I enjoyed being around them and following them and their journey.
So I was telling you earlier that I just podcasted with Emily, and I'll kind of give people shed some light on how funny she is. So I'll ask you these questions later, but her answers to the question, what's the most impactful book you've read in a while, basically, was a book called Pussy. And it's all about like human sexuality and femininity. And she just went on this like really awesome rant about sex. And then the follow-up question was, what action would you recommend people take immediately? And she said, Go and masturbate and have a blast.
That's hilarious. I totally see that as being Emily.
I love it. Yeah, I was so impressed with her. She's an awesome chick.
Yeah, she's amazing. I love her energy. We've had great interaction in person, but also like online as well. We follow each other and getting to kind of see each other's journeys and what we're working towards. And then obviously anytime we get to connect in person and talk to one another, that's always a great time. It's just really cool to see what she's working towards, not only in the fitness and what she's doing, but also in life in general. Yeah. So she's definitely good people.
What athlete do you most admire? Who is someone in the sport that you really admire and why?
Oh man, that's a really good question. I've come across a lot of amazing athletes, and being able to hear their stories and see what they've done and see what they've accomplished, over years and time. It's hard to pick one. I think of one that was kind of really inspiring to me. It was in 2014, was Regan Huckabee, and meeting her at the games and getting to talk to her a little bit and her experience and how we were making the most of our experience at that games that year. And she's someone just, I see what she does. She's training. She opened a new gym this past year, I guess this, 2017. She's a mom, and anyone that has kids and has a family, it's amazing. It's props to them, because I don't have any kids and I have other things going on, but it's amazing to see, and it's motivating to have them accomplish what they've accomplished at that point. And she's someone that I've connected with, and it's really cool to see what she's done.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can take that kind of two different ways, right? When you see moms and dads that are still fucking crushing it, you can either have the mentality like, man, they're just like, they just have something I don't, and they're just like gifted, or they just, have had a life served to them on a silver platter. Or you can realize that, or it can inspire you to get rid of all your excuses, right? And like really take accountability for your own life. Like if they're taking care of three kids and they've got a career and they're working their ass off in the gym and even competing sometimes, what excuse do I have?
Exactly. And there's another friend that just popped in my mind, is Jessica Olson. She lives down the road from where I'm at, and we train together from time to time, whether I go to the local box that she's at or she comes here to the garage gym. And she has four kids. She's my age. She works a job. She gets up early in the morning, gets in her workout, goes to work, makes sure her kids are at school. Then she comes home. If she has time, she'll come train with me, or she'll get maybe another workout in later. And then again, make sure she's there for her kids. And it's inspiring and motivating. It's like you have four kids and you have these other tasks that you're working towards, and you make sure that fitness and your life in terms of being healthy and active is still a priority. And that's amazing. And I see that as inspirational and motivation for other people out there that maybe are living similar lives or going through certain things. And it's like, how do I do it? And that's a testimonial to show how someone can do it. I mean, obviously everyone has their own story and they've gone through different experiences in their life, but it's really cool to see that. 'Cause it's like, wow, like you see the bigger picture in terms of how people are living their lives.
Right. So I spoke to a few different people in preparation for this podcast, and I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth, but it sounds like either this year or last year, before you started the vineyard and the wine company, you were considering whether or not you wanted to continue competing. And if that is true, I want to know kind of like how did you work through that decision, and what led to you deciding to stick in it and do both, run this new company and continue competing?
Yeah. And so, yeah, this past year, there was a lot on our plates and what I wanted to do and accomplish, but I was like, you know what, we can do this. Like I've always had a kind of a positive outlook on life, and it's been a lot. And every year Alex and I will sit down after the games and it's like, do we want to do this again? Do we want to reevaluate? And in 2016, we did that. We sat down like, all right, let's do this again. Let's focus. Let's prep. Like having the vineyard and then having the training as a priority, they're both important. And that was something that we looked at in 2016. And in a way, the vineyard and training, they have kind of like opposite seasons, if you want to call it, like in August, September, October. That's when we're focusing on the vineyard. We're harvesting, we're driving the grapes to California. That's been a big focus. So I have enough experience as an athlete competing and doing CrossFit where that can kind of maybe take the back burner or kind of be pushed to the side. We're still training, but just maybe not as much leading up to the games. And then after October, after that harvest kind of settles, that vineyard and the harvest, the actual physical labor work will take kind of the back burner, and then the focus will be shifted to the games and training. And so we did that from 2016 to 2017. And then even this year, same thing, reevaluated. And it was tough after the games, looking at everything we accomplished. We had kind of not really reflected back, and it's like, wow, we got our federal license and our California license right on the week of regionals. Like we were like, yes, this is awesome. Celebrate, but let's get focusing on regionals, 'cause it's this weekend. So, and then the same thing, like once we got everything licensed, then it was like, all right, let's finish the labels. Let's get everything bottled. Let's get the wine to the games. It was definitely a rush to get everything set up to the games. And the month before the games, we went out to Madison to meet with the bar owners and restaurant owners to say, hey, can we do this wine release? What are the options? We met with a distributor. Can we get the wine into the state? Can we get it into the venue at the games? And so a lot of focus and a time was pushed there. Training took a little bit of a hit in terms of that time, because you can work towards two things, but it's really hard to be 100% successful at such a high caliber goal. And so after the games, it was like, yeah, I didn't do as well as I did. I still made it to the games for a fifth year in a row, and that's something that I worked for and I wanted. But then after the games, it was like, all right, like let's sit down and reevaluate, like let's do this again. So again, it was a lot on the mind. It's like, is it worth it? And it is all worth it. Like at the end of the day, all the time that you put into your goal, it is worth it at the end. But knowing that you're going to go for a high caliber goal, the focus has to be on one thing or that one goal versus multiple, because it's going to be very hard to achieve that. And that's something I've learned this past year. So to be able to go into this next year, like full throttle, I'm excited to say that I'm going for it again.
That's so cool. It sounds like, so I learned this concept that I'll share with you, that it sounds like you kind of do naturally, which is a sign of like a high performer in general. And it's the distinction between the words and but. And in life, we have circumstances that, and we have things in our lives that we want to do that are that conflict with each other, right? Like for in your case, you wanted to start this wine business. And here's where it gets interesting. Some people would say, I want to start this wine business, but I'm still competing as a CrossFit Games athlete. And as soon as they have that but in there, then starting the wine company is not even an option, right? Because everything after the but is negated and deemed impossible. And by simply shifting it to, I want to start this wine company and I'm a CrossFit Games athlete, you immediately start looking at the possibilities and the basically the like how you can execute both, how you can make both happen at the same time. So when I heard that, it's such a good way to reframe any time you're like conflicted as to what you're trying to do, or you feel like you're limited in what you can do in a certain amount of time, then just replace but with the word and you'll start to figure out how to do it. So it seems like you guys just said, I want to do both. And now you're committed to figuring out how to do both successfully, which is amazing.
Yeah, I think that definitely, that's something in terms of that thought process. It takes a while, I think, but like I 100% agree. It's if you already say, oh, I want to do this, but I can't because of XYZ, then it's like you're already putting that defeat in your mind versus changing your wording, changing how you think, how you approach something. It's like, all right, and again, the attitude that it takes, the individual has to have that attitude or that drive or desire to say, yes, I want to accomplish this and this. Again, everyone's a little different, but I think it starts a big part of it starts in the mind and the mental capacity.
Mm-hmm. So have you guys been, how have the sales been from CrossFit athletes? If y'all even can track that.
In terms of wine being sold to CrossFit athletes?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Surprised by that or yeah.
Oh, you mean people in CrossFit period?
Yes.
No, I'm not surprised by it because our biggest focus has been the CrossFit community. That's where our niche market is. That's where we have the biggest following. We'd like to expand into other fitness industries, not just CrossFit, but it's been amazing to see the support, that people have shared with us, not only, in person when we talk to them, but also, online, we have conversations or emails or discussions on social media. So it's been amazing. I mean, it's tough because we want to sell more. We want to continue our growth for each month, more and more each month. But we look at it, it's like, all right, we've been in business since, I mean, we were licensed in June, July, and we started selling some online sales, like as a pre-sale since then. So it's been 6 months. So it's at the same time, this is where looking back and looking at the bigger picture comes into the big scheme of things, because it's like, wow, we've only been selling wine for 6 months and we're doing pretty good. I mean, again, pretty good is relative to what you're comparing it to, but I think that we've been successful and I'm looking forward to what we can attain in the future.
And why do you think that is? Is it because of your story that people are connecting to? Is it because of the way that you make the grapes and the wine is healthier, or what are people latching onto that's making them buy this wine?
I think a big part of it is the CrossFit community. People want to be a part of something, and I want to share my story, like not just the winemaking and what I'm doing, but I want to share my entire story to the community, to say, hey, this is what I've gone through. This is my life. Hopefully I can inspire someone else to go for their goals or follow their dreams, whether that be fitness related, business related, et cetera. And I want to be able to share that with as many people as possible and to include them in the journey, like, that's even better. Luckily we've had some amazing people come and help us harvest during the months of September, August, and October. And the community from CrossFit comes and helps out. A couple times we've had like 20 to 25 people come and help us harvest. And that's amazing because we wouldn't be able to do it without them. So to be able to share this journey and what we're doing and the story of each wine with the people out there, I think people want to be connected and they want to feel a part of something. And I want to be able to share that with everyone. And I think that's a big part of how we've been able to be successful so far.
That's amazing. That's so unique to CrossFit. It's like, it's almost like a religion, right? The only other place in the world where you get that many volunteers for something is at church.
It's
so powerful.
Yeah, no, I think it's, again, to be able to be as inclusive as possible with everyone around me. And again, not just CrossFitters, but anyone out there that's that wants to give back or be a part of something, to be able to be able to kind of have that mutually connected relationship or friendship is amazing. So the more we can do that, the better.
So now you're a professional athlete and an entrepreneur, just an incredibly busy human being. I'm sure you've had to learn some serious time management skills. So how are you able to do it all? What habits or skills have you cultivated to allow you to be able to be productive in your business and still train your ass off?
Time management has been something that worked on a lot this past year. And delegating tasks that I know for the business at a certain point, and then training at a certain point. So for example, when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to spend 2 hours on the business work, emails, following up with licensing or taxes with the wine, our website. So if I spend that from 8 to 10 in the morning, once I'm done there, I'll eat breakfast, I'll head to the gym, I'll do my lifting, I'll do some of my training. After 2 to 3 hours, I'll take a break. I'll come back to the house. If there's any emails or anything that I need to follow up with for the business, I'll do that, get another meal in, get a shake in, and then I'll return to the gym, finish the rest of my training for the day. And then once I'm done there, then I'm finished with the training. I've got that all accomplished. And then I'll come back in, get dinner, relax a little bit. If there's anything else that has come up in the afternoon that I need to address that night, then I'll do it online, and finish it up, and then try to be in bed around 10:30, 11. So then I can, restart the next day over.
I love that. And so I noticed you said that the first thing you do in the morning is work on your business rather than start working out. Is that by design, or do you just not like to work out first thing in the morning?
No. So the biggest thing, we played around with it. We've tried different things, tried different kind of schedules, like working out in the morning. And this is what's kind of worked best for us. So if I get up, I can have some coffee, get my day started, do some work, and then wake up and slowly get into the flow. There might be some change, like if I'm traveling or if we're going to be driving to California, we might get up early, do some training in the morning, and then I can do the business on the road or when I'm traveling or if I'm flying. So that's been the best schedule for us so far. I know everyone has their own schedule, but this has worked best for us, managing time and managing the workload that needs to be done in each day. Right. If stuff piles up, then I can address that. Things that maybe need a little more time and attention, I can do those on my rest days. But it's something I notice. If I start to get frustrated or overwhelmed, or there's a lot to work and then tons of emails, I'm like, all right, I'm going to cut it off for the day or for this portion of the time. I'm going to stop, close that, kind of shut my mind to that, and then focus on training. So that I can make sure that I'm getting my training in and my work done for the day.
I think it's, yeah, you just landed on what most people would say is kind of the most efficient way to work, right? Like most research shows that we're most productive early in the morning. Some people super late at night, but most people really early in the morning. And one of the reasons is we have way less distractions, right? Like everybody's kind of booting up for the day. They're not busy texting you or emailing you yet. And so, you know, getting 2 hours of solid work in right when you wake up can actually, you can get more done in those 2 hours than most people get done in their entire 9-to-5 job, I believe, because they have so many distractions and, you know, people demanding things of their time. So if you can be proactive and create things, get things done before everybody else is even awake, then you can be so much more effective.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it varies from person to person, the job that you have and what you're doing in the work. It's kind of cool. On just a side note, there was a question posed on this group on Facebook about what time you work out. And I loved reading everyone's comments because it's like, okay, this is what I think is ideal for me, but it's like everyone has a different plan and different schedule. Some people would say early morning, some would say afternoon, evening, some would say right at 12 because I get whatever done in the morning, then I work out, take a break, and then I can focus for the afternoon. So obviously everyone's a little different, but I think it comes down to what's best for you and just focusing on that, and then you'll be able to give back to your goals and whatever you're trying to accomplish in the day.
Right. Okay, so I want to talk about your evolution as an athlete and try to shed some light on what led to you becoming this just powerhouse. And so it seems like you grew up as a competitive athlete, but I don't think you were a superstar by any means. Is that like, what was it like in high school?
Yeah. So junior high and high school, I played golf and volleyball. In high school, I was all state golf and all state volleyball.
Okay. So borderline superstar.
Yeah. Borderline. Yeah. Golf, I think, was great experience for the mental game and the mental capacity. We didn't have a full team for the women, but I had two good friends, girlfriends that we did golf together, and we were on the team in terms of individuals. And that was a great experience. After high school, I had an interest of playing volleyball or golf at a collegiate level. I was told that I was a little too short and they had their defense line set up for volleyball. So I moved to kind of focusing on golf, and the golf team the university I went to never really formulated. So I just focused on doing study abroads, and I would do my own fitness. So I'd run and go to the little gym that they had at school. And then once I finished college, I moved to the Bay Area and I got into running just for kind of fun as a recreational. Most people are like, oh, you do running for fun? And I enjoyed it. I really liked it. Mm-hmm. So that was something I would do, and I'd just go to the gym. So in terms of athletics, I think that ended around high school in terms of, you would look at sports that where people go.
Right. Just a side note, I had the worst game of golf that I can remember like 2 weeks ago. It was so atrocious. I didn't lose as many balls as I thought I would, but it was still, it was so bad. And I was playing with two people that I was meeting for the first time, and it was a little bit embarrassing.
Do you guys play a full 18 or nine?
Nine. Thank God. I was like, I usually play left-handed, so I'm usually much better.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's golf is, I feel like it's, you know, if you, it's similar to other things. If you don't play, then obviously you lose that skill set or whatever, but it's hard if you are at a certain caliber, whether that's golf or anything else, and then you don't play for such a long time, and then you try to reintroduce it. You're like, oh, this is the score I should be hitting. This is what I should hit on each hole or each nine or 18. So that's funny.
Humbling.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's very humbling.
I know sometime after college, you had a really tough event in your life. Your sister passed away in a car accident, and that had just an enormous impact on many areas of your life. Can you tell us about that time period and kind of how your life shifted as a result?
Yeah, definitely. So it was in 2008 that she passed away. It was actually in January 2008. So it'll be 10 years this end of this month. And it was, I think back, and actually I've been thinking about it a lot recently, but I think back to like the last time I talked to her, the last time I got to see her, and I'm grateful that I got to see her when I returned for the like a holiday break that year, and getting to see her, spend time with her and talk to her. And it was, and when it happened, it was just so, I mean, obviously you don't expect that. You can't plan for that. It wasn't like she was sick or had something where you could plan for it, but it was so unexpected. And it was very surreal and not real at the time. I was finishing my last semester at Hawaii Pacific University. And I actually had an interview that day with Lululemon to get a part-time job for the rest of the semester. And when I found out my mom had called, I found out by my mom's message, she said to call her, and I called her and I spoke with her. And it was devastating because, you know, obviously you don't want a family member to pass. It was a younger sister. You think you're kind of at that point. And I remember thinking at that age, like, you're invincible. Nothing can really happen to you. Right. And when it happened, I took a red eye back and I flew back, and something that I totally am fine talking about this, and I've talked about it with other people before and just sharing my experience. But that night I flew back on the plane, and I had a crazy dream that I was in some high rise apartment in Waikiki, and I saw her come to the window and the sliding glass door. And I tried to open the window, and I opened it, and it was like crazy windy outside, but it wasn't, there was a calmness at the same time where there was no noise. And she's like, I can't come in, but I'm okay. And then I woke up on the plane. And as much as I wish the circumstances were changed, I know that she was okay wherever she was at. And so that was like, it was definitely life changing for sure. I went home, was there for like her life celebration, and then returned back to Hawaii. And then 3 weeks later, I came back for kind of a, not necessarily a funeral, but again, a life celebration to celebrate her life.
Yeah.
People from all over, like our, most of our time that we spent together was in Montana. We grew up in Montana. So most of our friends and family from there, friends that were out of state in Portland, she was attending, she had attended Portland State University for 2 years. And so some of her friends had come to visit and be there for her. And it was just, it, looking back, it's a huge thing to think, like, you look back on your life and you look how life can be so fragile in the way where things can happen at a drop of a hat, things can change, and you're like, man, I wish this or I wish that. And so it's definitely been something that, like, I has changed my life going forward, where it's like, I'm going to appreciate my life and my experiences and my opportunities as much as I can and share that with people as much as they can. So if there's any way that I can share my story to say, hey, like, this was the life that I lived, this is my experience, I want to be able to share it as much as I can. And she, her attitude on life was like, I'm going to enjoy myself, I'm going to have fun, I'm going to live each moment to the fullest and not have any regrets. And so that's something that she taught me, was like, I'm going to use that same principle and live my life the same way that she did. And that's kind of taught me to say, hey, like, try to have as minimal regrets as possible in life. Take full advantage of the opportunities you have, and appreciate every day and every person you have, because things could change at the drop of a hat. And I wish I could go back and call her, see her, and text her. And I can't do that, obviously. But it's like, as much as I can take her message and the impact that she had on my life as her, as my sister, and share that going forward, then it's like, I feel like I'm giving back to her, and I feel like I'm helping her and helping as many people as I can in the community.
Did you ever have any like resentment or anything like that towards, I don't know, like fate or God or just circumstance in general? Was there any of that going on?
Yeah, it's, so I think back to, and I've, this is something I've, this is also a theme that I've had in my life, where it's like things happen for a reason, whether they're good or bad. And that for sure kind of tested that theme or that principle or that ideology that I had. And it was frustrating, because it's like, why her, why now? Like, and it's something that you will never get the answer to. That's what I've learned, that. And you can't hold yourself to the flame, because it's like, I know that we had called, like, a couple of days before that she passed, we had called each other back and forth, but we kept missing each other's calls. And then she had called me, like, I think the day before. And then I was like, oh man, like, I need to call her. And it was a Tuesday. I had a communications class that went for like an hour and a half, hour 35 minutes. And I meant to call her before. I was like, oh, I forgot to call her now. I was like, I'll call her after. And then it's like, I was getting ready for the interview. I was like, all right, I'll call her later tonight after the interview. And then obviously that didn't happen, but it was like, there was something kind of pushing me to call her, to reach out to her. And it's like, I wish I would have listened to that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it's like, all right, fate, things happen for a reason. And she had expressed to my mom before she passed that she felt that she was going to pass away at a younger age. And obviously, like, that, I think she definitely was very intuitive. She definitely had a great connection with her mind and her body. And so I don't think she obviously planned for that or anticipated that, but none of us did. Mm-hmm. But I think it definitely tested me for sure. But my attitude was like, all right, like, don't let this get to the point where, like, you don't live your life or you can't be happy because she's not around. Like, oh, she's gone. She's passed away. Like, you can't enjoy life. And it's like, no, like, that was what her motto, like, enjoy life, live each moment to the fullest. And so it's like, all right, I'm going to keep her spirit alive through my life and through my journey and my message.
What role did that and does that play in the fire that you have today for competing?
A huge part, not just in competing, but in life in general. It's definitely, it makes me appreciate the life that I have and what the opportunities that I have. And I'll definitely think of her, like, when it comes to maybe workouts or times where I feel I'm tested mentally and physically, I think of her and I'm like, okay, like, she's not here, but I'm here. So I'm going to do this for her, or I'm going to do this thinking of her, like, having her give me her strength,
right,
in a different form or fashion.
It's interesting you say that. I've been reading about, and I actually talked to a guy that writes books on sports psychology today. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how when people choke, it's because they're focused entirely on themselves. And, you know, like everyone's looking at me and like overthinking their mechanics. And something as simple as, you know, having someone in your life to kind of connect with spiritually or mentally, however you want to view it, can actually be a performance enhancing tactic, if you will. So it makes sense that would even help you.
Yeah. And I think that is possible. That's definitely something that I think is out there, whether it be CrossFit or other sports. There's one moment I think of in 2015 at the South Regional where it was the workout with the calorie row, chest to bar pull-ups, and strict deficit handstand push-ups. And Alex and I talked about it. I actually cried when that workout came out because I was like, strict deficit handstand push-ups? Great. Like, I'm not going to be going back to the games. But we talked about it and he said, you know, like channel Kirsten, like channel her energy and her spirit. And he was like, all right, I'll focus on that. Like whatever you can help me with, like help me. And I actually in practice, I'd done that workout, I think 2 or 3 times. And the first round, I think the first time I did, I got 1 round. Second time I did it, I got 2.5 rounds. And then when I did it at regionals, I got to the last round. I didn't complete the workout, but I got to the last round of the strict deficit handstand pushups. And it was like, holy hallelujah, like amazing. And again, obviously I don't know exactly if that was it, but it's like, that was definitely something I focused on. I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to give it the best I can. All the training that we've done has led me to this point. I've had belief and faith in everything we've done. I'm going to go out there and give my best. And, you know, if she can just give me a little bit of extra oomph, then, you know, awesome. I'll take it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now you've become just such a solid athlete, like so consistent at the games. And I look at you as one of the most level-headed athletes. Where does that calmness come from? And is that actually what's going on under the surface?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I definitely think that the mental game is huge. And Alex and I have talked about that a lot. We've had plenty of discussions over the years about the mental game and the mental fortitude. And we are all physically able and capable of a lot of things, but I think that mental capacity and that mental, I guess, game in that term also needs practice, needs training. And that's something we've done a lot of over the years, having conversations. And the biggest thing I think that helped before even I met Alex was golf. Like I think golf is such a mental game in terms of, you know, staying in your own lane, staying focused on your own score, on your own strokes, on your own, like on your own path versus anything else. Like there's so much that can come up into other people and other things, but it's like, what are you doing for yourself? And something that Alex and I've talked about recently, there was a quote that he shared with me, and it's not as good as they say, but it's not as bad as you think. So not too high, not too low, keeping that even balance or that even Neil going through, whether that's competition or training, and life and business. And that's something that not too high, not too low. We always revisit that, if not on a daily basis, a weekly or monthly basis. And I think that's really important that's helped me get to the point where I'm at now in terms of staying focused. And there can be so much going on, whether it's the games or regionals. And regionals is a very stressful time, probably the most stressful out of the entire year for us, because there's all these athletes that are vying for those 5 spots. I mean, obviously it's changing now how regionals change, but those spots going to the games. And it's a point sometimes where I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't fun. I don't want to be here. And so we really try to instill that, you know, not too high, not too low. Right. And that mental game, I think doing it year after year has been important. And it's got me to where I am now at.
That's great. That's like another way of using the analogy of like holding sand, right? If you hold it too loosely, it falls. If you hold it too tightly, it squeezes through your fingers. But if you hold it just right, you can grip it. I love that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So
that's really cool.
Knowing everything you know now, I think you started in 2011, right?
Correct, yeah.
Knowing everything you know now, if you had to go back again, do you think you could have progressed even faster? And if so, what would you do differently? Like if you were telling you know, telling yourself, if you could talk to yourself in 2011 and say, hey, do these things differently, what would you do and think differently?
It's funny. I don't think I would go back and change anything. I don't think with all the knowledge and information and experience that I have, going back and talk to myself then, I don't think it would have changed anything. When I first found CrossFit, I was like, this is amazing. I love it. I was a Kool-Aid drinking girl, like kind of intense, a little too intense if you ask me now. Where it's like, I should have, I look back and I was like, all right, maybe put a cap on it. But I had that passion and that drive and that interest. And after the games in 2011, when I volunteered, I signed up for 3 competitions in a row. And I definitely don't recommend that. So that would be something, maybe one piece I'd say, hey, don't go crazy. Don't sign up for 3 competitions in a row. Yeah. But at the same time, that passion, that desire to want to compete, put me in that kind of a fast track to wanting to compete, to trying to do more. And I talked to some people that maybe they've been in CrossFit for a couple of years, or they've been training for a couple of years, and then they started to go compete, where it was, all right, I'd done CrossFit for 5 to 6 months, and I was like, let's do this. Like, I want to go to regionals. I want to go to the games. And a lot of people back then were like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, cool, Margo. Yeah, whatever you say. And I don't know if they really believed me or not, but it's like, I didn't care. I was kind of like, I can do this. And I think that's something that CrossFit gave me when I first found it, was like, anything is possible. Like, you want to go for this? Cool, man, you can do it. Like, I could barely snatch 95 pounds when I met Alex, and I would struggle and I would get frustrated. But it's like, looking back now, I'm like, man, I'm warming up with 95 pounds. Like, it's no big deal. So it's like, the path that I took got me to where I'm at now. And I think that goes back to kind of my theme, where it's like, you know, everything happens for a reason, whether it's good or bad. And a lot of people ask me now, like, what's your biggest piece of advice that you can recommend? I mean, obviously will vary depending on their specific questions, but the something I've told them is, you know, be patient, like, enjoy where you're at, like, take the steps that you're doing to get where you're at, but like, don't try to rush something and focus on the next thing, because then you're going to miss out where you're currently at. And then you're going to look back and it's like, I didn't even enjoy that, or I don't even remember that because I wasn't really present for that.
Right. That's great advice for literally every aspect of life.
Yeah, exactly. Not just in fitness.
So how did Alex become your coach? Is that like, as soon as you became competitive, he started coaching you? How did
No. So yeah, that's a good question. We met end of 2011, beginning 2012. And we had actually met at a bar. It was through CrossFit friends, but we talked and he was interested in dating me. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't want to date anyone right now. I just want to focus on CrossFit. And so we would talk, we'd hang out and we'd train together a little bit here and there. And he was like, hey,
that's a slippery slope. Start training together.
I know. So we started training together and he's like, you know, I shared my goals and what I want to do. And, you know, he's like, well, this is what I think you should do if you want to get there. This is how you need to go about it. And I was all ears. I mean, he had been doing CrossFit since like 2006. He had tons of fitness experience before that. He was in the Marines for 6 years, had been programming for friends. So we had a big base in terms of information and knowledge. And so I was like, all right, this is what you think I should do. I'll follow it. Like, I'll do what I need to do to get there. And it kind of just evolved. And then we started dating. And then that was, I think, 2012. And then it's kind of evolved into where we're at now. And so it definitely, in the beginning, we definitely had to work on the communication in terms of, cool, this is athlete and coach. And then this is boyfriend, girlfriend. There's a couple times where it was like, oh, you need to be doing this. And I'm like, I am doing this. And so it definitely, it's evolved and we've made sure to kind of delegate those hats. And we have those conversations.
Yeah. So I would love to go even more into that because I think this concept of having like multiple relationships with the same person is going to become a bigger and bigger factor in today's world because so many people are starting small businesses together, like couples are starting small businesses together, and they're having to, well, they have the challenge of separating the, what Adi and I call the secular and the sacred. So how do you guys go about like setting and holding those boundaries?
It's a really good question. We have multiple based relationships now. And it's something that we have to just really focus on and communicating with one another and saying, hey, like, this is a coach athlete, or this is business partners, or this is our personal relationship. And it's tough because I do see that happening more and more now. And I think the lines get blurred and blended a lot more than before. Mm-hmm. And when we first started, it was, I mean, we kind of had those two relationships, coach athlete and boyfriend girlfriend. And now it's kind of like, all right, we have a little bit more, and we're always around each other, and we always are talking. It's intermixed. So it's like, we could be talking about the CrossFit, then we could be talking about the business, and then we'll switch and go talk about the business, and then we'll talk about, oh, let's do this for vacation. Right. So it's like it's tough to kind of separate them. We can do it, but I've noticed over time that it's like, we need to separate those. We need to like kind of make a little bit more clear distinction between what we're talking about. Right. Cause at times we can get at each other's throats, or it's like, well, this is what I was thinking and this is what I was meaning. And so I think being able to separate them, it's challenging, but it's something, if we do that, then things go a lot smoother and we are better able to communicate with one another.
Right. Well, obviously you guys are doing it really successfully because you have three different relationships going on. And I think what you said about separating them rather than them like dancing together all at the same time, I think is crucial.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I think about it like being productive in general, right? I know mm-hmm. that if I do have a team meeting and then I do a podcast and then emails and then train, like I'm not going to do any of those at full speed. And so instead I've learned to only do my podcast on Tuesdays. I do meetings on Mondays and Thursdays. I only answer emails for 2 hours a day at the end of the day. Like those types of things make me mm-hmm. so much more productive. And in the same way, a mentor of ours taught us this distinction of the sacred and the secular. And the secular is, you know, scheduling, calendars, what are we doing with bills? And the sacred is, you know, let's talk about the how we met, and let's go to a movie and let's cuddle and all of that stuff. And it's just so easy to, right when you wake up, start talking about the business or training, and then like right before you go to bed, do the same. But if you if you can have the awareness of keeping those sacred moments sacred mm-hmm. and keeping them, like protecting them, I think it can really like save your relationship, right? And allow you to act, like successfully have both relationships. But it has to be, you have to have like a box around both, if you will.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's super easy to blend them and have them like watered together. Or like you said, dancing together. But I think the more there can be a distinction, obviously there's ebb and flow. There's a little bit of give and take from time to time, but the more you can kind of put them in their separate columns per se, the communication and being able to enjoy each relationship, I think will be heightened.
Hell yeah. So I have a few wrap up questions for you before we get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
What book have you given most often as a gift?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually haven't given many books as gifts. I would love to read more. There hasn't been much time of it this past couple years. I think of some books that I've found or come across. I've received a lot of wine gifts or wine books recently, or stories about wine. I think that's been really cool because that allows me like, all right, I can put that on my to-do list to read. Mm-hmm. But I don't have anything I can actually recommend to anyone. I'm sorry.
All good. All good. What is a belief you hold that if others held would have the biggest effect on their life and performance in general?
Treat others how you want to be treated. That'd be the biggest thing I think of, like karma, like what you put out is what's going to come back.
I couldn't agree.
And that's the biggest. Yeah, that for sure.
I couldn't agree. And
just to circle around to a book, I would think, and this is not a book, but I think of a planner or like a calendar organizer. Mm-hmm. That's something that I would, I love receiving, and I've given a couple times as gifts. Again, not a book, but a suggestion or recommendation.
So are you someone that actually uses like a physical planner?
Yes.
You're a unicorn then. I don't know many people that still do that.
Yeah. And I still use my phone and I have like my apps and all that, but like having a physical for me, it's something I've done not only with training as well. Like I write everything I do in a physical written book, and then I put it online. But same thing, I like writing out, cool, this is on this date, I'm doing this at this time.
Yep.
I've done that. I think I definitely get that from my mom, But it just, I like it. It helps me remember because I'm writing it down at least once, if not twice.
Yeah. I love the idea of a physical planner, and I've never been successful at like keeping up with it.
That's the biggest hardest part.
Yeah. Owning my own business, I've learned to put everything in Google Calendar, and yes, it's like life changing for me.
Yeah, I agree. That thing is definitely, it helps me because one, remember, but then also have your reminder, whether it's a day before, a couple hours before. It's awesome.
Just to touch on that belief that you just brought up, you know, do unto others. I read a really interesting book that I would highly recommend people either listen to or read. It's called Tribes by Sebastian Younger, J-U-N-G-R. Yeah. And he talks about the research about how we basically evolved to want to be in tribes, and we evolved to want to contribute to other people. Mm-hmm. Because like 10,000 years ago, no human being could survive on his or her own. They had to survive together. And so our brain started to develop to, you know, produce all of these hormones that make us feel good when we're around and helping others. And so it's not just like some hippy dippy bullshit, like do unto others as you would like to like done to you. It's actually like a way to hack your brain chemistry, right? That is like, if I've learned anything over the past year, it's that's literally the key to having a happy and fulfilling life, not focusing on what, you know, others can do for you, but what you can do for them. And there's actual science to it.
Totally. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the biggest thing along with all that is like, you know, whether you use tribe or community, being able to give back and help others. Mm-hmm. And it's because you want to do that. You have a genuine innate desire to help others. And that's something that I've always aligned with. Like, I want to help others. I want to give back. And I think a big part of that stemmed from, you know, wanting to be able to help my sister, wishing I could have changed things back then. And obviously I can't, but it's like going forward, how can I help others? How can I give back to the community? How can I share my story and then inspire others to find their thing? And I think that's really important. And when you align yourself with people in that tribe or in that community, then it's like you get to feed off each other. And I recommend people always to like be in positive environments and be around people that support you, and having a supporting network or family or friends will take you so much further than being obviously in one in a negative environment. But that just helps you grow and helps you evolve, and it helps other people grow and evolve as well.
I couldn't agree more. What is one action that you'd recommend people take immediately?
In like life?
Yeah, life, CrossFit, career, anything.
Well, that's tough. There's so many things I think about. The one thing that pops my mind is be patient, but then work hard, like be proactive, like give back, give to yourself. If you want to be successful, you got to meet your own goals, and then in turn, you can help others reach their goals.
Love that. What is one thing that you've stopped doing that has contributed to your success?
Ooh, I would say, that's a tough one. The first thing I think of is minimize traveling and driving back and forth, mm-hmm, and giving more time for myself, being a little more selfish, not in a negative way, but a positive way to be able to meet my goals. That was something I started doing in like 2011, 2012. I was doing a lot, going a lot of places, and minimizing the outside distractions allowed me to focus on my goals and focus on what I wanted to get. And so I think that'd be the one thing that's definitely helped me back then and even now.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I've learned the same thing over the past couple of years. Another book that I read recently is called Vagabonding, and it talks about this. Like we have this, I don't know, like so many people want to just travel all over the world, and they end up taking like these really short trips all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it's just not fulfilling, right? Instead, yeah, it would be better to travel for longer in fewer places so that you can stay focused doing what you're doing. And then, mm-hmm, when you get to where you want to go, you travel where you want to go, then you can actually like fully disconnect from your you know, your day-to-day life rather than just like pop over for a weekend. It's definitely harder to do than say, but that definitely resonates with me. It's, it can really mess up your routine, which has a really big effect on the rest of your life.
Yeah, I definitely, and I think, and it makes me think of like, you know, the term multitasking. And when I was like finishing college and getting into life and the world and everything job, I was like, oh man, I'm so good at multitasking. Like, this is great. But it's like, and then I learned over time, like, it's not so great. Cause it's like, you think you're actually getting a lot of things done, but you're not. Like, you're doing like 10% here, then 20% here. Then you go back to the 10% to try to do another 20%. And I think there's actually, I've read a good number of articles where it's like, you think you're being more productive because you're doing more things, but then you're not actually finishing those things.
Right.
So that kind of goes into like, all right, I'm going to travel all over the place. And I love to travel, but it's like, if I'm traveling, then all my time or my resources that needs to be put into this is getting spread thin. It's not getting put into where I really want to do. So then it's taking me longer to get there. So that's something that maybe kind of think of that as we talked about that.
Yeah, that's huge. I think there's a term for it. Like, it's called stickiness, or like stickiness factor, where the most productive people are the ones that can just stick to one task and see it to completion rather than bounce back and forth. I'm totally a bouncer, but I am I'm aware of it and I'm constantly working on that.
Yeah. It's kind of like a constant like self-awareness piece where it's like, all right, you know, be as present as possible or focus on one thing at a time. And I think it takes time, a little bit of training over and over and over after you do that multiple times, and eventually become more of a habit. But to be able to just say, hey, I'm going to do this overnight, that would be wishful thinking.
Right. All right. This has been phenomenal, Margot. Thank you so much for opening up to me and to all the listeners. I think you have a really, really powerful story, and just so cool to see you living life to the fullest and being so successful at everything that you're doing.
Thank
Where
you,
can
yeah.
you buy some wine though?
So the wine, you actually can go to the vineyard.space, and the wine can be purchased there. We can ship to most states. If you go to the website, there'll be a handful of states we can't ship to, unfortunately. New York's one of them, South Dakota, North Dakota, Illinois, but we'll be working on eventually adding those in the future. So the wine can be purchased there.
That's really cool, because one time I tried to ship some whiskey to Mississippi, and it literally took months for me to figure it out. And I eventually had to just like Venmo someone in Mississippi to buy the whiskey and bring it to this person I was trying to gift it to.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely the legality of alcohol is really challenging. There's so many regulations on it. But I mean, it's a learning experience. So we're trying to make the best we can do, and be able to offer that to everyone out there that's interested.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff, Margot. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you, too.
Bye.
Bye.